This is an encore presentation of an interview with local music icon Scott Joss. Sunday, February 16th, 2020, at 7:30 p.m., Scott will be joined in performance with Chris Gantry, a Nashville singer-songwriter. They'll perform together at Redding's Cascade Theater. If you're listening to this program Saturday, February 15th, you can still hear them in concert together. If you're listening Tuesday, February 18th, 2020, sorry, you're too late, but you can still enjoy the music and the interview with our own Scott Joss. Enjoy. Hello, and welcome to The Eclectic Hour. I'm your host, Craig Boyer. KKRN Community Radio's The Eclectic Hour is a show that is sometimes an eclectic mix of music only, and it's sometimes interviews with music woven in that relates to the subject and to the person being interviewed. Today, I'll be interviewing Scott Joss and playing some of the fine music he's recorded. Today's show is all about the life and the music of local music icon, Scott Joss. It's his music and story that we'll be sharing today. Welcome, Scott.
Well, hi. How are you, man? Good to see you.
You too. I'm very pleased to have you in the studio.
Finally.
Finally, yes. We've talked about it and talked about it and talked about it.
Well, you know, all this time I've been going up to Round Mountain to do these. Now I don't have to go there.
Isn't that nice?
It's nice. It's right in my own backyard.
It's pretty easy. I like it too.
Yeah.
My first question for you is, when did you first take up the fiddle and guitar, and how did that happen?
Mm-hmm. When did I first take up? My first instrument was actually the harmonica, but I don't really claim that. That was way early. I think my dad was telling me it's like third grade, something like that. We used to march around our living room table and play this little song, my dad and I.
What was it?
It's one that he kind of just made up.
Oh.
And we never had a name for it that I'm aware of.
And your father still plays the harmonica. In fact, he comes into where I work, Connected Living, Golden Umbrella, and plays at least once a month.
Yeah. And he's done several things around town with people here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's really interesting to watch him like step into my shoes, you mm-hmm. know, which is odd. Now he's getting a little tiny taste of what it was like for me all this time. But anyways, so that was that, and then that kind of came and went. Moving forward, probably around fifth grade, I think that's about what it was. Janet Jay, a fiddle player that mm-hmm. Her name at the time was Janet Greif. I don't know if you remember her or not, mm-hmm. but she was here a long yep. time ago. I was in elementary school, Bonneview Elementary School, South Reading. And she came in all by herself with her and her fiddle. And, of course, I didn't know what was coming. They announced over the intercom there at school that there was going to be what they called an assembly, and we were all required to go sit on the gymnasium floor and listen to what was coming. We didn't know what was coming. So, anyways, here we all go, all us elementary, you know, first through sixth grade, go stomping into the auditorium. Sit down, you know, and in she comes with her fiddle. And she moved into the center of us. And she just said hello, kind of introduced herself, and told us she was wanting to develop in all as many elementary schools as would let her start up a fiddle class. Now, I had not seen a fiddle before, had no interest in music other than that harmonica thing per se. I mean, I listened to music a lot, but no interest really to play until she came. And she played, like I said, all by herself. And it was one of those moments, and I've told this story I don't know how many different times, that you only hear about from other people where that, you know, like the world kind of just stopped and everything on the outside went away. And this person or people were, you know, the focal point, like a light was around them, however you want to say that. But it was like everyone else disappeared. And I just went, oh, you've got to be kidding. I mean, she played Blue Valley Waltz, Soldier's Joy, something like that, one of the fiddle tunes. And then she, of course, ended it with Orange Blossom Special all by herself, which was incredible. I could not believe it. And I knew at that moment, it's like, get me a fiddle. I bugged my folks forever. And they finally rented me one, and that was the beginning of all of this. And then after that, it was just full on playing that fiddle. I didn't ride bikes anymore. I didn't go out and do it. As soon as school was over, in that room, open the case and get my little Sears and Roebuck 45 player. I had her 45, had Blue Valley on one side, Orange Blossom on the other. And I learned them just making it, putting that needle back, replaying, and by ear, I kind of scraped these together before the class had even started. I kind of just, whacked them out the best I could. And she came in, we started the class, and it was just full-on fiddle playing, man. Went into District 6, became, learned the championship tunes, played those things over and over and over and over again. But that's how it started. Just that one person coming. I mean, just changed
like
my life.
Like a lightning bolt.
Just changed my life. Just changed it entirely.
You really had the passion for it. It was a natural for you.
I guess. Yeah. It seemed like it.
That's great.
When one person can come along and do that to you, when the universe hands you something like that, it's not something you should ignore, mm-mm, I believe. So, anyways, that's how it started.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I wanted to play something called Bakersfield from your souvenir.
Doing time in Bakersfield.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah,
indeed.
Exactly.
That was the very first, we put out an album. Pete Anderson, who was Dwight's producer, produced the...
You say Dwight, you're talking about Dwight Yoakam.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's the only Dwight I know. there's a whole lot of stuff there. But yeah, that's the beginning of my recording world here, basically.
And I think of the Bakersfield sound. Mm. And, of course, your connection with Merle Haggard and all of that. And
Buck Owens and all
Buck
that.
Buck Owens,
people, yeah.
Exactly right. And so I wanted people to hear some from
great.
The souvenir.
If I can stand to listen to it, and if you can stand to listen to it, so can I.
I've listened to it many times. I've listened to this CD, Souvenirs,
and I
really enjoy it. I played several times from it, Working Girl and She's So Lonely and several other
I liked Working
songs.
Girl and She's So Lonely was a good one, That was a Working Girl was a Freddie Powers tune. So see, I was tying all this stuff in long time ago.
Nice. We're gonna get Bakersfield.
Great. Let's get on down there.
Playing honky tonk sonatas in a room without a view. You bent my mind till I can't find the feelings left for you. Caught up in a moment that I know is standing still while I'm doing time here in Bakersfield. Standing on a bridge with matches in my hand, thoughts of you drift by me, so I watch them while I can. Knowing any minute that my dreams will not be real, still doing time here in Bakersfield. Never know how lost I feel till you've done time in Bakersfield. My heart could break and never heal, doing time in Bakersfield. I love
Wow. Yeah. That is good. Your phrasing, everything about it.
I'd forgot. That was pretty good.
Yes.
Not bad.
Yes.
It's interesting. I don't sit around and listen to these things anymore. I didn't listen to them much when we first did it, but I heard it a lot when we were recording it, of course. But listening to it, it reminded me that Tom Brumley was the guy that played steel on that, and he was Buck Owens' steel player for many, many years. And he's no longer with us, but I was fortunate enough to be able to have access to players like that and who were willing to come in and play. You know, he was here working on a Yoakum, or there working on a Yoakum record, and just kind of agreed to throw mine in there after the fact. So I got, you know, I got them after they're all warmed up and everything. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, Tom Brumley, I mean, come on. Amazing musician, and so many wonderful people played on that record. Jimmy Christie, the drummer, was Dwight's drummer forever and ever, and I got him on the Merle gig for a while. Just an amazing drummer. God, it just goes on and on.
Yeah, when you think back to that and you realize the connections that you've made, it's
I had no idea how it was all going to come out.
It's just a great big mystery at
it's
the time.
It's wonderful. I love it. It still is. I don't know what I'm doing.
good stuff. Our listeners, they'd like to know, I think I would, hear how it was you got on that bus first time, on Merle Haggard's bus, and how that all came about.
Tiny Moore. Mandolin player, fiddle player, but predominantly an electric mandolin player. Played with Bob Wills, you know, way back in the day, and played with Merle for many, many years. He was also going to those fiddle contests that I mentioned earlier. And you know,
here in Shasta County?
No.
Where was this at?
But we travel out like to Weezer, Idaho.
Oh, okay.
And Sacramento for the state contest. He lived in Sacramento. So he didn't really go to a whole lot of them like we did. He'd go to the ones that were close enough. But he was the one, I discovered him at one of the fiddle contests. And he was out in the parking lot in between fiddle tunes. I mean, fiddle contests predominantly have a certain way that you're supposed to play the tunes, and you're supposed to maintain the old time style, no double shuffle, no tricks, no fiddle tricks, you know, right down the line, you know, because their big thing is and was preserving the history of that music. So needless to say, after many years of doing that, and many for me at the time was probably 4 or 5 where I worked really hard at that stuff, and it's wonderful music, and it taught me an awful lot about playing fiddle and the soul and the feel of things. But it's very, for me, it was very stifling because they wouldn't let you improvise. In my head, my brain, as I'm playing these things the same way over and over again, my brain's just going, no.
I can do so much more.
I just discovered Tiny Moore, and I watched him out in the parking lot, and he's improvising over these, making stuff up. So I had to learn how to do that. So it ruined my old-time fiddle playing, which is fine because I was pretty much done. You know, I had been the California State men's champion 3 years in a row. I think I was, 17, 18, 19, or 16, 17, 18. I'm not sure which. And I had reached fourth place or something at the Nationals, which is, you know, not bad for me, you know. But I kind of had it. You know, I discovered that, hey, there's more to music than this great old-time fiddling.
Following this formula.
I discovered because of Tiny, you know, that man, he just made stuff up. And he was out in the parking lot swinging, you know, playing swing tunes. Not fiddle tunes, swing tunes. And had a great rhythm guitar player, Vern Bogman. Yeah, he was from Sacramento as well. And it just enthralled me. So I started following Tiny around, and he kind of let me into the group. He, you know, they'd be playing, and there'd be people around, and people trying to do it. And he kept picking on me, you know, come on, jump in here, boy, even if you...
He recognized something there.
I guess.
He did.
You know, and I fell on my... He'd throw me one, and I did, blah, 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 and just screw up and leave it behind and the whole thing. And he'd laugh, but he always kind of kept an eye on me, I guess. And that's what I heard later, was that he was the one that told Merle. He said, you know, there's a kid in your town here that's pretty good, He's got everything it takes, but he's greener than hell, you know. And so, I was driving the school bus out at Buckeye out here back then. This was 1981, and I came back from the morning run, and I was doing custodian work too. I was 19 at the time, and I parked the bus and went on to do the rest of my chores, and here comes the secretary from the office at the school. Oh, Scott, oh, you're never going to believe it. Oh, my God, listen. And I was like, okay, well, what? Tell me what's going on.
Is it good or is it bad?
She said, Pearl Haggard just called. And they were all flabbergasted. And it's like, okay. And I was, you know, She said, you got to call him back. He left a number. So I called. You know, I had no idea what I was getting myself into, and I was already a Haggard fan, but I hadn't really delved into it real hard yet. Because of Tiny, I was exposed to Merle's music.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, if you can be in Bakersfield in the morning, we're leaving. If you can be on the bus, then consider yourself part of the band. Bye. And that was that.
Wow.
So I put my keys on the counter, and I said, Merle called, and I'm going to go. You know, I had no idea where we're going, didn't know anything. I was playing at Art's Place, for God's sake, you know, with Easy Picking for 40 people, or every place I could play around this town, I was busy playing. And all of a sudden, so I get in my car, and I had a big old Dodge Aspen station wagon, and I threw some stuff in a bag, you know, shorts and socks, a couple of shirts. I had no idea what to... No idea. Just put it in the bag, got in my car, and took off for Bakersfield. And I got there. I went to the appointed hotel, and there was the buses out there. And I walked up to the bus, had my fiddle. I didn't even have an amp or anything. I had a fiddle and this paper bag with my clothes in it. And Norm Hamlet, the steel player and band leader and all that, was there because he had brought the bus over. And he said, can I help you? Merle hadn't even told anybody that I was coming. So I said, well, Merle called me and said if I be in Baker's. He said, just get on the bus. We'll figure this out. Okay. You know, so I get on the bus. And Grant, I'd never met Norm before, and I never met anybody in Merle's band except for Tiny. And here all the – but I knew who they were. I'd seen pictures of them and all that. So here they come.
Had you met Merle?
No. And so here they come, the strangers, one at a time, coming to getting out of their cars, kissing the wives goodbye, dragging their crap onto the bus, you know. And here, so here goes Don Markham. He kind of looked at horn player. He kind of looked at me like, and just kept going to the back. And here they all look at me like, what the hell is this kid doing?
What's this alien doing here?
Yeah, what's going on? And so meanwhile, unbeknownst to me, of course, Norm had been checking it out to see if I was supposed to be there or not. You know, it's what's going on this kid, you know. So nobody said anything to me. And finally, Tiny came in and said, hey, boy, good to see you here. You made it. All right. He went to the back and packed his, put his stuff up and all that. Most of the guys, it was like midnight. They used to like to leave way late at night. So here I am sitting on this big old couch. You know, everybody had gone back to the back of the bus, got in their bunks, hanging up their stuff. The bus rolls. Nobody said a word, really, except for Norm and Tiny, and off we go. And we'd left Merle's bus behind because he wasn't ready to go yet. We just took off. And all through the night I sat on that couch. And the next morning I didn't sleep. I just sat on the couch nervous, mm-hmm. as you can only imagine,
mm-hmm.
Not knowing what was going on. And pretty soon...
You didn't even know where you were going,
no.
did you?
So I crawled up to the Norm was driving. I do remember that. And I said, Norm, where are we going? He said, we're going to New York City. We're going to play Carnegie Hall.
Whoa.
Nobody had assigned me a bunk or told me what to do. So I sat on that couch pretty much from all the way from here to New York City.
What did you think, though, when you heard Carnegie Hall?
To me, it's a blank. The only thing I remember is kind of getting there, and the first thing I saw was we got off the bus, and no sooner had we parked, and it's kind of a, you know, it's an odd little story. I'll try and make it as clean as I can, but it's New York, so, you know. Well, so we parked the buses out back of the place, I guess, and so we get off the bus, and no sooner had we got there than there's this bum that comes up, puts his hand up on the bus, starts urinating right there at the front of the bus.
Gosh.
That was my introduction to New York
to New York City.
Yeah. And all I remember of that is basically what happened was we played the show. Merle, you know, figured out that I really didn't know what I was doing, and he tried to throw me a solo, which did not work out well. He laughed. He just looked at me, gave you that Merle stare, and then he looked at me, and then he just laughed. And that was the last I played. I sat there for that tour pretty much waiting to play. I mean, you know. But he knew that I was, you know.
You're green.
Green as you can get. So that's the only thing I really remember of that whole tour, other than the bow dropping incident. Do you want to hear about that?
Yeah, what happened there?
Well, we were still playing on that same little tour. It was like 10 or 12 dates, I think. And Merle took another chance on. We played some dinner house. I don't remember where it was or what the name of it was, but we were on a stage, and down below us, way down there below us, where people were eating. And, you know, finishing up their dinner, and when they were done, we were supposed to play, I guess. And so we got out there, and I'm sitting there, I'm staring at Merle, because Tiny had told me, never take your eyes off him. He could whirl around at any time and point at you to play. Okay, Tiny. You know, and Tiny's kind of whispering to me while we're playing and all that stuff. Okay, watch for this. This is our twin parts coming up, you know. And so I'm just failing miserably, you know. And so while Tiny was kind of whispering to me, I'm looking at Tiny over here, you know, and all of a sudden Tiny kind of stopped and went and just stopped and was looking over towards Merle, and I whooped around, and Merle's like pointing at me. So I jumped up out of my seat to take my solo, and lost my bow, fell out of my hand, went right off the edge of the stage and landed on somebody's table down there. So
Scott.
And Merle was doubled up laughing. They're handing my bow back to me.
Get it out of the lasagna.
Oh my God. And he was laughing so hard, you know, but that was, you know,
you weren't laughing.
I was not laughing, no. But he just, for some reason, I don't know, I guess he just continued to follow me, and you know, the rest is kind of history. But that was the rough and bumpy start of the whole
the very beginning
Haggard thing.
And you were with him for, what, 15 years?
This last time. Yeah, that was way early this last time. Dwight, you know, I just finished up 14, almost 15 years with Dwight Yoakam. And Dwight decided to make changes and let everybody go, and wanted to change his direction, which is fine. And I was already working on Haggard's record in between Yoakam tours. I was coming home to Reading and working on Haggard Like Never Before album, which came out in 2001 or 2002. And I told Merle, he said, what's going on with you? What are you, looks like something's wrong. I said, well, Merle just let everybody go. Dwight just let everybody go. Sorry. And he said, well, don't worry. He said, my fiddle player, I don't know what happened to him, but I need a fiddle player.
All right.
You want the job back? And I said, you know I do. And I played with him from that moment until the day he passed. We were, and, you know, I don't have words to tell you what I thought about Merle. You know, what a neat thing to have happen to you in your life. And it continues. You know, I look back on it now, and, you know, to be able to play with these people who wrote these songs, like Yoakam wrote all them tunes that we played, I mean, that's incredible. Haggard, of course, wrote all it. I mean, and Chris, getting to play these tunes now.
Yeah.
You know, Sunday Morning Coming Down and Why Me, Lord, and all of the. It's so different when you play them with the guy that wrote them, or gal, you know, if it happens to be that. And I'm so fortunate to be able to look at them while they're singing those tunes and play with them, you know. That's the coolest thing ever.
Pretty magic.
Truly is.
Pretty magic.
Truly is.
Okay, well, I want to get in some.
I've talked too much, haven't I?
I want to get in some more of your music here. Okay, we're going to go on. I think we'll do Working Girl.
Okay.
From your Souvenir album.
So we are going to get to newer stuff, aren't we?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes, we're going to.
This old stuff, yeah.
It's great stuff, but I want people to hear what you did, too.
Yeah.
So we'll do Working Girl, and then we'll go on.
Okay.
She gets up before the average working man. Got to feed the family, get the children off to school. And on her way to work in the early morning rush, she hurries to the corner where she barely makes the bus. She don't give up easy, her dreams are still intact, even though she knows that her man ain't coming back. He's still gone and she's out there all alone. She works her fingers to the bone to make the kids a home. She's a working girl, she's a joy to the world, the children's salvation and a credit to the nation. And she works right there beside the man and stays with him all the way. I'd like to see them try to justify the difference in the pay. Like to see them try to justify the difference in the pay. I'd like to see them try to justify the difference in the pay.
Well, we have Scott Joss in the studio and we're sharing his music with our KKRN family. And that's the last one we'll do from his Souvenir CD. Really like it a lot. Want to let you know that you're listening to the Eclectic Hour on KKRN Community Radio with your host Craig Boyer, and we now have a studio in Reading, which I think that Scott's liking that.
Hey, I didn't mind Round Mountain. It's a pretty drive.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But we want to let you know that if you've not already done so, please consider joining our KKRN family by sending a donation of support to KKRN. Pencils and paper ready, P.O. Box 188, Montgomery Creek, California, 96055, or find the donate button at our safe and secure website at kkrn.org, and we thank you so much. We're going to resume the music with a selection from your brand new CD. Yeah, called How Far to Jordan, and it's a darn good CD, too.
Oh, thank you. I'm pretty proud of it. Pretty proud of it.
Yeah, you should be. And we're going to start with a song, Back Playing Honky Tonks Again.
Oh, another Fred tune.
Can't say I've done that bad with all the good luck that I've had. But I spend my money recklessly. Guess that I was meant to be living on the south side of reality. If I had put some dough away, by now I could go away to my little island paradise. Hey, but long my money, you know I lost my good time, friend, and I'm back playing honky-tonks again. I'm back playing honky-tonks again. This is where I started out, and this is probably where it all will end. You know my pride is like a willow tree bending in the wind, and I'm back playing honky-tonks again. There's a party going on, and I'll bet they're serving caviar and showing up in those fancy cars and being satisfied with who they are. Hey, but I make my living writing songs. I must be writing something wrong. The one I love forever is untrue. Hey, but along with all my money, you know I lost my good time, friend, and I'm back playing honky-tonks again. I'm back playing honky-tonks again. This is where I started out, and this is probably where it all will end. You know my pride is like a willow tree bending in the wind, and I'm back playing honky-tonks again. Yes, I'm back playing honky-tonks again. Hey, I'm back playing honky-tonks again.
Scott Joss, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, I better clear this up. I yelled out there before that started that it was another Fred tune. Guess I should explain that. It's Freddie Powers.
Okay.
That was Merle's songwriting buddy and my friend for many, many years before he's passed now, too. But he wrote a whole bunch of tunes with Merle way back in the day. You know, helped Natural High and all that stuff from the early 80s. Fred had a big hand in all that stuff. So, and I've played with Fred over the years, a huge influence on me as well, Freddie Powers. Look him up. He's a wonderful, amazing talent. Lots of good music out there by Fred. So I figured I needed to keep that going too.
Good for you. Now, next up is Footlights. Chris Christopherson is playing or singing on that.
Do I have time to tell a quick story about
that?
Yeah,
yes, please.
So we were making this record, me being me.
Did you write Footlights?
No, that's a Merle tune.
That's a Merle tune. Okay.
I had to do one of Merle's tunes in deference to his meaning to me in my musical life. And he always said it was probably one of his most autobiographical tunes that meant something to him. And, of course, it hits me in all the right places, too. What was I going to tell you? So we were recording. I was recording this album, and we did this album right here in good old Redding, California, at After Hour Studio, which is down here. You've probably been there. Bruce Turgan, you know, phenomenal musician, has this studio. He runs it like, you know, he's an electronic genius. He knows this whole recording thing in and out. Thank goodness, because I don't have enough brain space myself to do it. But you know, it was just him and I made this record. I played everything I could play, and he picked up the slack. He played bass, did the drums, some piano stuff here and there, a few little guitar licks he did. But for the most part, it's just me and him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But anyways, so we were in the middle of recording this, and we'd gone on tour with Chris, and we were in Nashville. Had a day off in Nashville, which is not fun if you have a day off in Nashville. As a musician, sometimes that can be weird to have a day off in Nashville.
I think it'd give you an opportunity to go listen to some other.
Well, we were kind
folks.
Of tired. It was nice to have a day off, but
okay.
I like Nashville just fine. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
So anyways, they came to Judy and I. Judy's with us, my wife Judy. She sells the merchandise and everything for Chris. So I get to go on the road, and she gets to come with me now for the first time in 30-some-odd years. They just said, so we hear that you're making a record. Would it be okay if Chris was on it? And they'd not heard anything I'd done. And, so I said, no, I'd rather not.
You did say,
of course not. After they picked me up off the floor, we went to, they had already booked a studio, they being Chris and his wife, Lisa.
Oh, my gosh.
They wanted to be on it, or he wanted to be on it. And immediately we're in a car heading off to this little studio, and they said, if you can get the track sent over to this other studio, we can get Chris on this record today.
Wow.
I'll do my best. Well, Bruce works all night. He doesn't get up until, he's a night owl like most musicians are.
Mm-hmm.
And I was emailing and calling and, he had everything turned off because he was asleep. Well, I talked to him about it later. He said, I just happened to get up, to go get a drink of water. And I looked at my phone, and I could see it was being blown up by you. So he said, I chose to answer it. And he said, I got a text back from him and said, I'm on my way to the studio. I'll get this done for you. And that bless his heart. He got two tracks sent over for me, How Far to Jordan, which Chris did some backgrounds for me on, and then this Footlights. He wanted to do that one. So it got done in a day, and it was miraculous that it even happened in the first place.
I'm so glad it did.
But then to even have, the whole thing is just very odd to me. But we got him on there, and I'm very proud of it. And this Footlights, he just nailed it to the wall. He came in, and here I am, supposedly this hotshot guy, and here comes Chris. Not heard it at all, just walked in and went, okay. They put the mic in front of him, and poof, he had it. It was a done deal. Done deal. Didn't even need it. He sang it like two or three times, and then we picked the one we wanted, and it was done.
Great. We're going to hear it. We're going to hear that one.
Oh,
and right after that, How Far to Jordan, too. Your title track of that CD.
Quite proud of it. Quite proud.
Indeed.
Of it.
Indeed. Here we go.
Okay.
I live the kind of life that most men only dream of. I make my living writing songs and singing them. But I'm 41 years old, and I ain't got no place to go when it's over. So I'll hide my age and make the stage and try to kick the footlights out again. I throw my old guitar across the stage, and then my bass man takes the ball, and the crowd goes nearly wild. See my guitar nearly fall. After 20 years of picking, we're still alive and kicking down the wall. Tonight I'll kick the footlights out and walk away without a curtain call. Tonight we'll kick the footlights out again and try to hide the mood we're really in. Might not put on my old Instomatic grin. Tonight I'll kick the footlights out again. Thank you. live the kind of life that most men only dream of. Make my living writing songs and singing them. Oh, but I'm 41 years old and I ain't got no place to go when it's over. So I hide my age, make the stage, and try to kick the footlights out again. So I'll lie about my age, make the stage, try to kick the footlights out again.
That's what it's all about, kicking those footlights out.
Love that stuff.
Yeah.
What a song, man.
Indeed, indeed.
What a song.
And now, How Far to Jordan? Now, that's the song that you wrote, isn't it?
I did. It's my first attempt at, for lack of a better word, my first attempt at maybe a gospel tune.
Gospel kind of tune.
I don't know what other label to put on it.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
my father-in-law, who's a pastor, has been on me for years. Why don't you write a gospel tune? You write, you sing all, you know, these other songs. You need to do a gospel song. And so I kind of got tired of them yelling at me, so I started working on it. And it took me about 2 years to get it put together, you know, working on it a little bit at
right.
a time. But it's not a bad tune. I'm happy with it, and yeah. Chris helped me out with this one, too.
All right, we're going to hear it right now.
Okay. Yeah. God's golden shore, how far must I travel till I travel no more? It's been such a long journey,
such a long journey,
the longest I've known. So how far to Jordan and my heavenly home? Has anyone been there? Does anyone know? Just how much farther I have to go? Yeah, I've grown so weary of traveling alone. So how far to Jordan and my heavenly home? I'm on my way, I know that someday I'll be standing on that far distant shore, where I'll wander no more all alone. But until that bright day, when I find my way back to you, say how far to Jordan and my heavenly home.
someday I'll be standing.
Someday I'll be standing
on that far distant shore where I'll wander no more all alone. But until that bright day when I find my way back to you, how far to Jordan and my heavenly home? How far to Jordan and my heavenly home?
That is the question.
It is.
I like the way you you posed that question. At the end where you go, I like that.
That's about as low as I can get.
It was good.
I've been pretty low a few times in my life.
There you go. Okay. Now I want to make sure we get in a couple more here, at least one or two more. And I'm going to choose, Wouldn't That Be Something?
Wouldn't that be something? How about that? Wouldn't that be something?
Indeed. All right.
Wouldn't that be something if I spread my wings and showed you I could fly away? Wouldn't that be something if I asked you to fly with me on some wild and windy day? Wouldn't that be something if we both fell together and you threw your arms around me like you needed me? Hey, wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be something? You'd probably laugh if you could see the dream I had last night. You and I together on a maiden rocket flight. You were seated there beside me with that happy, frightened look. You and I got young again on that rocket flight we took. Wouldn't that be something? If you could look at me and see somebody great again, wouldn't that be something? If you should sing to me today, I started loving you again, wouldn't that be something? If we could look inside each other's minds and always find each other when we needed to, wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be something? If you could look at me and see somebody great again, wouldn't that be something? If you would sing to me, today I started loving you again, wouldn't that be something? If we could look inside each other's minds and always find each other, hey, when we needed to, wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be something? Hey, wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be something? Oh, wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be something? Hey, wouldn't that be something?
Another good one.
Wouldn't that be something?
No. Very, very nice. And I want to get in Until We Love Again.
All right.
That's a pretty one.
It is? It has several different meanings I've come to find out over the years, but, you know, just pick one.
Oh, okay. And you wrote this song.
I did.
And beautiful.
Thank you.
Come to say goodbye. I'll kiss away the tears you cry. 'Cause nothing ends once it begins, babe, until we love again. And until then, I'll think of you. All the things we used to do. 'Cause nothing ends once it begins, babe, until we love again. Until we love again, I'll hold on to your Until we love again, I'll wonder, do you think of me? So let me hold you heart to heart, and every moment we're apart, just remember I'm your friend, babe. Until we love again. Until we